Welcome to Hochoka Podcast.
When average Americans think about St. Patrick, they likely conjure up images of parades, shamrocks, and green beer. There is much more to this legendary guy, says Dr. Damian Costello. As Patrick's feast day is near, we share a two-part series on this fabled saint and the important lessons his life holds about human nature and ultimate meaning. Hello, Mataki Api, and welcome to Hochoka, here at the center of St. Joseph's Indian School's campus. I'm Scott Wooster, today's Hochoka host. We're glad you've joined our circle with Dr. Damian Costello. He joins us again today to bring another fresh perspective on Catholicism through an indigenous lens. Today, we turn to popular Irish holy boy, Patrick. Welcome, Damian.
Great to be back, Scott.
Always good to have you here. Mm-hmm. And so we've got to know each other pretty well over the last couple of years, I would say. Mm-hmm. And each time you come in and we talk, you're able to make a connection that before we met, maybe I was scratching my head a little bit if I saw the script. And you always do a good job of explaining these things. And so today, you're going to set me and the people right on this one, which is the luck of the Irish, the pot of gold, at the end of the rainbow, the wearing of green. And you and I have at least some Irish background, so we grew up familiar with these things in our own practices. There's something indigenous in all of that. And so I've been missing something all along, but you're going to hit me to it here.
Yeah, who would have thought? Indigenous life and indigenous spirituality in somebody like St. Patrick. But the reality is that Ireland, where St. Patrick ended up and where he lived most of his life, was a tribal society. It was outside the Roman Empire, had never been transformed into the Roman Empire, and had a lot of things that we associate and we love about Lakota spirituality.
Okay. Interesting. Mm-hmm. Let's unpack his life. Let's take a look at what his early life would have been like. He wasn't in Ireland at the time, right? I mean, Ireland was a tribal society, but he didn't grow up in Ireland?
No, he grew up probably in England. Some people say it might have been France. It's contested. But we do know that he grew up in a Roman town, and his dad was well-placed. He was in the upper class. He was a part of the aristocracy, and he grew up in a Roman villa, which for us would have been sort of similar to a southern plantation.
Okay.
You had servants, you had luxury, it was like a very nice house, Roman baths, like nice artwork, and slaves worked in the field.
Wow.
And so Patrick grew up very privileged and very spoiled, very sort of jaded. He mm-hmm. talked about not really having any meaning in life. Which is, of course, common today mm-hmm. I can identify with that in my childhood.
Right. Yep. Maybe not with the servants or the slaves and the, you know, that nobody
not that
was
part,
fanning
no.
with leaves when you were a young boy. That strikes me that the Roman Empire, I mean, I understand it spread that far, but it's just crazy to think of this kid sitting over in what is now England, which mm-hmm. or was it at the time? It was in England at that time, and Rome was in charge of it?
Basically, Roman conquered it, and you know, the roots of the English culture were being established there.
Okay.
Yes.
And so we talked a little bit off air about transformation. What mm-hmm. what was his transformation then? So all of a sudden he becomes iconic. Mm-hmm. How do you go from being, you know, a spoiled brat on the coast of England and to become who he is?
Well, his transformation occurred in very traumatic circumstances.
Okay.
This was the frontier of the Roman Empire, and you had various tribal groups in Scotland and Ireland in particular that mm-hmm. were raiding the coast, and the Romans would raid back, and there was talk of trying to conquer Ireland and expand the empire. But one day when he was a teenager, Irish raiders showed up and completely destroyed the villa, mm-hmm. took prisoners, killed the rest, and he found himself marching to the coast, a prisoner, chained with a collar around his neck.
Okay.
He was loaded into a boat and taken across to Ireland, where he was sold to a different group of people and taken into servitude on the other side of Ireland, where he lived for 6 years. He became part of this tribal society. So now, you know, this is very similar to a lot of the stories that are told, things that happen on the frontier here in North America. Mm-hmm. As mm-hmm. Europeans are pushing in, tribal groups are you know, there's that warfare, and tribal societies are actually very fluid. Some of the captives they take, they adopt and make part of their society. And so Patrick, he was a servant, but it seems likely that he established some sort of kinship relationships with the people that he lived with. And he spent this time out in the land. You know, Irish society was based on primarily cattle and sheep. And so he would tend the cattle and the sheep out on the land by himself for weeks and months at a time. Mm-hmm. So here he is, he's living off of the land, and he talks about how he, for the first time, began to pray. Mm-hmm. He would wake up in the morning and say 100 prayers in the morning, and at night he'd say 100 more. And so this is almost sort of like an extended vision quest, mm-hmm. where you go out onto the land, when you're by yourself, you offer up your prayers, and at some point the spirits visit you. Mm-hmm. And so after 6 years, they visited Patrick in a very dramatic way.
So I want to hear about this transformation that he had with the spirits out in the field, because that appeals to me. But what was indigenous, or how was culture that he was experiencing in Ireland at that time similar to the indigenous culture? Can you make that pairing for me?
Definitely. So this is an oral culture. So all of the stories and songs are passed on in the way that they were here. And all of the knowledge and spiritual life was performed with song and ceremony. So they'd have these big communal bonfires, sacred fires at the equinox between the different solstices. So February 2nd, May 2nd, August 2nd, and November 2nd would be this sacred time when all the fires would be extinguished, and there'd be one fire that was relit, and then the fire from there was passed out to all the different dwelling places.
Okay.
And, you know, there's so much we could say about this, the mythology of the holy people that lived all around them, mm-hmm. This kinship with all the living things. And even today, in the Christian context, it continues with the Celtic cross. So it's a standard crucifix, but it has a circle imposed on it. Mm-hmm. And so you look at that, like I do, and I say, that's the medicine wheel, mm-hmm. right? That all of life is a circle. That's a very cyclical understanding of spirituality and your life on the land.
Right. And so he was a part of that, but and also a part of going out and finding out who he was in the field without all the trappings of his early life. He has nothing of what he has before. He's out there with nothing but his thoughts, his emotions, his prayers. So what happens when he's out there?
Well, what I think happens is that there's two things going on. He's unlearning all of the sort of urban comforts and the imperial system. Mm-hmm. He's giving that up. And I should say three things going on. And he's being immersed in this tribal context on the land, being stripped of pretensions and sort of seeing the world as it is, seeing the land as it is and the creatures around it that sustain him as it is. And I think also taking his own spirituality seriously, right? He does have a Christian spirituality that he begins to intentionally open himself up to. And so after this long period of purification, he has a couple of visions that say, Patrick, you've prayed well. You'll be going home. And so he has that vision, and he's confused. How could this ever happen? There's a lot of challenges for this to occur. He has to get all the way across Ireland, like 200 miles. Mm-hmm. And according to tribal law, if you are an unknown person, right, if you're not part of the tribe— and you are, you know, considered to be a servant, you could be killed on sight by another tribe, mm-hmm. or abducted and put into a worse situation. And so he's like, I don't see how this could happen. Mm-hmm. Sort of doubts it. And he waits a couple weeks, and he has another vision. And so he takes off, probably traveling at night all the way across Ireland. He manages to connect with a group that's about to set sail, who at first turn him down, but then they later let him join. And he has this long march through the wilderness in, you know, what is probably England, where they almost starve to death until he prays. And he had been sort of mocked by the sailors as, you know, a holy boy, prayer boy. Like, what good is this spirituality that you have? He says, watch, I'll pray. Yeah. And they encounter a group of wild pigs that saves them from starvation. Long story short is that he makes his way home after 6 years, and nobody thought he had survived.
Yeah.
You know, this was a pretty common practice for Roman settlements to be raided, and nobody had ever come back. And so suddenly he comes out of the woods to his family, and they can't believe it. And they say, Patrick, don't ever leave again. You know, you're staying here. And you can just, when you read the account, because we do have his words, he wrote this all down, this sort of unqualified joy that he had returned home.
Yeah, and made it all the way back. Mm-hmm. He didn't really leave home, right? I mean, mm-hmm. he was taken from home. Mm-hmm. He was basically a slave, right? When mm-hmm. and even when he was in the field, he may have been happy with his prayer, but he was still looking to mm-hmm. get back to his people and get back to his home. Maybe not for the creature comforts, but more because that's his home and that's his people.
Yeah, so I think it's unclear. It's probably was very ambiguous.
Yeah.
I know I've had experiences when I've traveled or done something that's very difficult. Maybe you had this experience in Sundance. You can't wait for it to get done,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
And, oh, man, it's going to be only one more day to go.
Yeah.
And then it gets done, and you're like, wait a minute. That's where I want to be.
Mm-hmm.
That's when that was when I was most fully alive. That's when I was most actualized. That's when I was engaging with what was important about being a human being.
For sure.
And I think he had that experience as well.
Yeah.
Like once that initial burst of seeing people he loved and that comfort of being home and that journey coming to an end, I think he realized over time, wait a minute, the person who I really am is back in Ireland. And whether he thought that or not, the spirits made sure he knew that because he had another vision. He had a vision where the people of Ireland, that actually was a bishop, brought him letters from Ireland, which is interesting because there was no writing in Ireland, or not letters. They did have carvings they would put on stone, but they didn't write full letters. But they gave him, this person gave Patrick letters from Ireland and said, holy boy, come back and walk among us again, like calling him back.
Yeah. This is the vision.
This is the vision.
Yeah.
And so, you know, talk about sort of complicated and beautiful situation. Mm-hmm. Like here he was not free. He was a servant of slave of some kind, but he also must have had these sort of very deep relationships with people. Like there are stories about his step siblings that later became, you know, part of the church, right? He must have really been loved and loved some of these people. And so the long story short is that he decides to become a priest and then go back to Ireland.
So you're telling me that he was enslaved and taken to Ireland and made his way home, had a vision that he was making his way home, and then went home and then had another vision and went back to the same place he had been taken as a captive.
It seems crazy, doesn't it?
Yes.
But what helps unlock this and what helped me to understand this in a very deep way were the stories that are told again in North America of captives, white captives who were at first, you know, they were taken away in captivity and they ran the gauntlet, right? That mm-hmm. that process of you're getting beaten by the whole community mm-hmm. to sort of be tested, and that those who showed bravery and who, you know, survived and then showed themselves to be good community members became full members of the tribe. And at different times, these people were forcibly or by choice left. They tried to go back to where they came from.
Right.
And a lot of them escaped to go back again. They had realized they had found for what was for them true life, true connection. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what happened with Patrick. And so you can see him, you know, I love thinking about that moment where he's crossing the ocean again, which is such a, I think, important image in Irish culture and history. Because Ireland, they tell these stories of the various waves of people who had come to Ireland and the battles that ensued. And there was the last conquest, the last battle of the Gaels coming to Ireland. And one of the heroes, Amargin, sings this, you know, this beautiful chant where he says, "I am the ocean, I am the wind, I am the waves." And that's part of, you know, the spiritual power in which he is coming to Ireland and becoming part of that place. Mm-hmm. And we'll see in the next, you know, episode, the song that Patrick sang that sort of enacted his return and sort of full integration into that land and the people who were there.
Yeah. And I'm astonished by his story. I really am, that he as a young guy to grow up that way would end up flipping his script and then going back. This would trivialize it, but it almost strikes me as a Stockholm syndrome kind of thing, where, you know, you start to identify with your captors. But it's basically, that's what you're telling me. I mean, that's not what you're telling me. That's what he lived. Mm-hmm. That's basically what it was.
And I think this story is, I think, relevant to people who find themselves at St. Joseph's who aren't native, mm-hmm. but who are native spirituality, Lakota spirituality, and the spirituality of St. Joseph's speaks so powerfully to life and who we are as human beings. Mm-hmm. I think it speaks for me, and it probably speaks for you, that this journey of coming to a different place among a different people, you often find something you didn't know about yourself and unlock something that was missing.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say definitely, and I think you hit it on the head there where, you know, I've been here for 30 years because of that very thing, mm-hmm. right? And so it makes St. Patrick relatable to me, as you phrase it that mm-hmm. way. And you could maybe also even make that stretch for the kids who come to school here too, you know. I mean, they're coming to a world that historically they have, but still to this day, it's still sort of a foreign thing for them. They're coming from their homes and leaving their families, mm-hmm. and they come here. And by and large, I think that's one thing we do at St. Joe's well, is you make those connections and you make them for life. Those kids are on board as adults even. Mm-hmm. I just had conferences last night and met with a ton of those adults or grandparents who once you're connected, and that sounds like it's what happened mm-hmm. with him.
And I love how you tied that up at the end. So much of Patrick's story is about discovering something new, but discovering something old mm-hmm. that he hadn't seen before.
Yep.
And I think that's what happens here at St. Joseph.
Yeah.
You discover something new, but it uncovers the depth of your inheritance, whether that's you're a Lakota kid who gets to, you know, participate in a new way in Lakota culture and tradition, mm-hmm. or someone like us who comes from somewhere else and maybe uncovers some of our tradition, whether that's Catholic or otherwise, in a new and beautiful way.
Yeah. And in their case, it was something taken from them, as mm-hmm. it was with St. Patrick's, and still finding your way and finding your spirituality and finding goodness somehow. It's great stuff.
Amen.
Good stuff as always. Yeah. Thank you for joining us. We'll have to do this again real soon, won't we?
Can't wait.
Yeah. And thank you to all of you, our viewers, for joining us here at Ho-Choka at the center of St. Joseph's Indian School's campus, where we talk about issues that are central to Native American education today. Until next time, stay centered.